Well, speaking of lab safety, I see we have some violations already. I cannot let you have any food or drink out. Now, most people don't want to eat in a lab, but some people want to have drinks out. You can't have this cup. You can't have any cups out or water bottles or anything like that. So you either have to put them, and not just on the floor, you have to keep them in a bag the entire time that you're in here, or on this shelf. The advantage of using the shelf is that I will let you take a drink from it if you keep it over here and come over here and drink from it and put it right back. Otherwise, no drinking anywhere in this room, all right? The only downside of putting it on the shelf is that you can forget to take it with you. But this room is used for sections all throughout the day, so I don't have to be here for you to come back and get something that you've left here. Just come in quietly and ask the instructor whether you can retrieve your items. Now to the meat of the performance. This is an unusual day for the lab for a variety of reasons. One is that you are not doing any activity today, any laboratory activity using the manual. From now on, except for the practicum day, you're going to do a specific activity from the manual. Not today, though. Today is purely listening and taking notes. So I said that I'm always going to make a recording each lab week, or nearly every lab week, and that's true. But today's recording is going to be much, much longer than it's going to be for the rest of the term, because that's the entire term, just me speaking to you. I mean, the entire meeting today. And might seem like it's getting to be a bitch listening to me, especially after 2 hours more of hearing me. But believe me, it is easier to sit there and listen to me than it is to stand up here and speak loudly for hours. It's actually physically tiring. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Is there a glare? Did that do it? Cool. All right. All right, I want to cover several scientific fundamentals. And by the way, this PDF that I'm using, that I'm displaying here, will also be available to you just like the slideshows are. Well, the slideshows that I use upstairs are already up on my site. I will post this as well, but it won't be on the same page as the slideshows. It will be on the same page as the recordings for lectures and the lab recordings, which is the current term lecture recordings page. So look for a link there eventually. It's not there yet, but I'll put it there. Anyway, scientific fundamentals, things that are important in science and not necessarily specifically biology, all science. And we'll start, as we see, with quantities and units, which are distinct things. They don't mean the same thing. Let's just start by asking whether anyone wants to define either of these things. What is a quantity? How much there is. How much there is a kind of a good definition. It's actually a little bit more specific than it needs to be. A quantity is basically anything that you can measure. We make all kinds of measurements in science. So it's not necessarily how big something is. That's one way of measuring something. It could be how fast something is. There's all kinds of things we can measure, right? Those are quantities. And there's no limit to the number of quantities. There are thousands that we could list, and still more that we haven't come up with yet. Anything you can measure, basically. How is that different from a unit? Yeah.
So when you say you have to describe a
That's right. In other words, units are predefined ways of measuring or making measurements of a quantity. They're predefined sizes. And the best thing to do here at this point is just give examples so that you'll fully understand. So let's start just by naming a quantity. Shouldn't be hard. What is a quantity? What's an example of a quantity? Well, what would you how fast a car is what would the actual quantity be there? When you say how fast is a car, what are you actually measuring? Speed is a quantity. Okay? Well, when you measure speed, you can use any of a whole long list of available units. Right? You could measure it in miles per hour, as the American silly system would use, or in kilometers per hour, or in millimeters per day. There's all kinds of choices of units, right? But the units are predefined sizes that we make the measurements of that quantity in. Is that clear, the difference? Okay. I ask that question every term, and everyone always says, yes, it's clear the difference. And then the first quiz that I give tells me otherwise. So if you don't understand the difference between quantities and units, let me know. Same with upstairs, by the way. If I say, does that make sense? That's not just a nervous habit. I'm actually asking you, does it make sense? And if you don't say no, I'm going to assume that everyone understands. And that can hurt you if you don't actually understand. Don't be afraid to admit that you don't understand something. That is kind of silly when you come to think about it, because if you did understand all of this stuff, why the hell would you be taking the course? You should be teaching it instead. Yeah. Yes, we're going to use many examples. So, well, come up with another quantity besides speed. Mass is a quantity, exactly. And you can measure mass in different units. By the way, this idea of different units brings up another important part of today, which is to talk about and compare two systems, and there's more than two, but two systems that still are in use today, systems of measurements, which are the metric system, the major focus of today's talk, and the silly system I was talking about earlier, which is what, sadly, the United States and Myanmar, I think, are the only two countries left that still use the silly system, the much harder to learn and use system that you all grew up with. The metric system is what scientists use. Now, it's what the vast majority of the world uses, whether they're scientists or not. But even in the United States, which is clinging on to this non-metric system for some reason, the scientists within the United States use the metric system because of its many advantages. But, for instance, mass. What would, if you were measuring that with metric units, what would the units be? What is it? Grams, right. A gram is a unit of mass. And what about the silly system you grew up with? What would be the unit of mass in the silly system? No, pounds is not mass. Ounces is not mass. Pounds and ounces are units of weight, which is not the same as mass. The silly system unit of mass is the slug. So this system that you've spent 20 years with, you didn't even learn fully, right? You probably didn't know the slug, right? Which is, engineers used to use it. American engineers used to use it. No one does anymore. But back to this difference between mass and weight. They're often confused, even by people who should know better, like books. But they're different. They're related. That's why they're confused. But they're not the same thing. Weight is an example of a force. And specifically, weight is the force due to gravity. Forces can be due to other things besides gravity, but force due to gravity is called weight. It's an example of a force. And the magnitude or the size of weight depends on the mass. That's why they're often confused. But mass is not force. Mass is the amount of substance or stuff that something is made of, that the sample is made out of. So how much material is in that sample? That's the mass. Now, to make it clearer how they differ, consider going into space, which most of you probably haven't done, but you've seen it happen. Go ahead.
You said mass wasn't what? You compared it to something else that it wasn't?
Mass, I don't know whether I said anything that way. I said mass is the amount of stuff that a sample is made out of. Weight is the force due to gravity, which depends on the mass. But think about going into space. When a human leaves the surface of the Earth, that the amount of material that's in that person's body, in other words, his or her mass, is not going to change by going into space, right? Or at least not going to change very much, negligibly. So the mass, you're still as massive in space as you are on the surface of the Earth. But you become weightless. Your weight goes to zero because you're no longer being pulled by the gravitational field of the Earth. So you have no weight at that point, but you have just as much mass as before. That's the difference. And if you were to weigh yourself on a bathroom scale, this actually kind of is a pet peeve of mine. Well, for the reasonable countries that use the metric system, the scales are a little bit different. For scales for the United States have two rows of numbers, right? Big numbers and smaller numbers usually above them. But anyway, when you stand on a scale, what are you directly measuring? What quantity? What one word says that? Weight, exactly. When you stand on a scale, what you're directly measuring is the force or the weight that you are exerting on the springs of the scale, right? So your weight should be given in units of weight, which are what for the silly system?
Pounds.
And they do. Those big numbers are pounds, as they should be. But then they give the so-called metric equivalent, which is what units? Kilograms. Well, kilograms are not weight units. They are mass units. So really, the metric equivalent shouldn't be kilograms. It should be the metric unit of force or weight. Does anyone know what that is? It is the Newton. Is that what you were going to say? Yeah, the Newton, named in his honor. Newton was a pretty smart dude. He called us a lot of things, including that F equals MA. In other words, force equals mass times acceleration. And this is why you can see by this definition that force involves mass, but it is not the same thing as mass. So anyway, even if you had newtons on the top, which would be correct units for the metric equivalent of weight, which is force, you would stand on that on Earth and be however many pounds or however many newtons you are. If you take that to the moon and stand on it, your pounds are going to go down to only 1/6 of what they are on Earth, and that's correct. because your weight is only 1/6 of what your weight is on Earth if you're on the moon. But your mass is still the same on the moon as it is on Earth. So if you look at the kilograms, which are also going to go down, then it's wrong. Right? It wouldn't be wrong if it were in newtons, because that would be force units. But your mass does not go down. The only reason they get away with this error is that they're assuming, reasonably, that everyone's going to be using the bathroom scale on Earth. So in on Earth, you can compute mass based on weight. That's what they're really doing. But just keep in mind that grams is a unit of mass, not of weight. Pounds are weight in the silly system. Ounces are as well. Slugs are units in the silly system of mass. Okay, now you get a have a good feel for the difference between quantities and units. Because I want to get more specific now. Each of these two things, quantities and units, can be categorized. There's two categories of quantities, there's two categories of units. And they're the same categories for the two. The two categories are fundamental and derived. So there are fundamental quantities and there are derived quantities. Correspondingly, there are fundamental units and derived units. And there's a correspondence between units and quantities. So, if a quantity, whatever it is you're measuring, is a fundamental quantity, then whatever proper unit you use for that quantity, that's also going to, by definition, be a fundamental unit. Whereas if your quantity you're measuring is a derived quantity, and I'll explain the difference in a minute, then any unit you choose for that derived quantity is going to be a derived unit. Okay, here's the difference between the two. Fundamental quantities are called that because they stand alone. They are their own things. Derived quantities are quantities that are actually made up of other quantities. If you think of this by analogy with chemistry, we were talking a little bit about atoms and molecules today. Molecules are made up of atoms. Atoms are, in that sense, fundamental. They're not really, because they're made up of even smaller things. But think of those as being fundamental. And the molecules would be derived because they're made up of a combination of atoms. All right? I said earlier that there's no limit to the number of quantities. That's true. But there is a very strict limit to the number of fundamental quantities. Surprisingly few number of fundamental quantities. Like 9 or 11. I can't remember exactly how many there are. In all of the universe, all of science, there's only a handful of fundamental quantities. The vast majority of quantities are derived quantities because they're made up of some combination of those fundamental quantities. Now, can you think of any fundamental quantity? Yeah.
Matter.
What is it?
Matter.
Well, matter is not really a... you mean mass?
No. Gram.
Well, a gram is not a quantity. A gram is a unit.
Oh, you mean fundamental units?
Fundamental units exist and correspond to fundamental quantities, but I'm asking for an example of a fundamental quantity. One that's not made up of other quantities. You have a guess? Can't hear you, sorry.
Length
is one. That's a fundamental quantity. And by the way, it goes by many names. Length, width, height, distance, those all really mean the same thing. They're all the same, different names for the same quantity. How far apart two points in space are. That's distance or length. And that's not made up of other things. That stands on its own. So that is fundamental. So is time, by the way. Time is fundamental. But speed, which was our first example that you gave, that's speed is not fundamental. Because speed is distance per time. So it involves two quantities, distance and time. Therefore, it's a derived quantity. This Newton's law that I just, Newton's equation that I just wrote up here, is another good example of this. This tells you mathematically that all forces, which are quantities, are derived, right? Because they're made up of mass and acceleration. And in fact, just acceleration by itself is already derived. Because acceleration is distance per time per time. There's three quantities involved. Another thing I should say about this is that a derived quantity has to be made up of two or more quantities to be derived, but they don't have to necessarily be two different quantities. A good example of this is area. Area is a quantity, but it's not fundamental, because area is really made up of two distances, right? Length times width, well, that's distance times distance. So area is made up of only one kind of quantity, but there are two of them. So that would be, in the molecules and atoms analogy, that would be like an oxygen molecule. It's only oxygen atoms, but it's two of them. You see what I'm saying there? Okay, so any unit you choose to measure area in, which there's many, has to be a derived unit because the quantity itself, area, is a derived quantity. Is all this clear? Make sure it is before we move on. Need any more examples? Okay. Let's look at some important quantities. This is by no means an exhaustive list. Some of these are derived, some of them are fundamental. But these ones are listed as important quantities as far as biology is concerned. These are things that have importance within biological measurements. Time. Now, time is not only fundamental, but it's a weird one because it's an exception to the rule of there being different units in the reasonable metric system versus the silly system. I think it's the only quantity that we share units within two systems. In other words, hours in the silly system is the same as hours in the metric system. Minutes, seconds, same thing. But for all the other quantities, we have separate units in the metric versus the silly system. Time is also an exception because the units, the metric units, are not decimal. The metric system, the reason it is so easy to learn and so useful is because it is a decimal system, meaning it's made up of powers of 10, which are easy to deal with mathematically, except for time, right? We don't deal with tenths of an hour, we deal with sixtieths of an hour, and then sixtieths of a minute. Yeah?
Would years fall under the time category, considering they're different on the Roman calendar?
Did you say years?
Yeah.
Yeah, years are time units as well. Months are time units.
Yeah, because I was wondering, because that falls under the Roman calendar, I think, which has variance in Asia or...
Yeah, it's. I see what you're saying here, that there is no truly standard year,
right?
Because there are leap years, and this is part of the silliness of having the calendar the way it is, which, if you've never looked at the universal calendar, which has been proposed decades ago, That's something that you can learn within 2 minutes, and we should be using that, because every individual date would always be on the same day of the week every year. You wouldn't have to adjust your calendars every time, which is a pain in the ass even with computers. But anyway, yes, they're all, even though they're not technically exactly standardized, they're still considered units of time. Mass, we've already talked about. Length, we talked about as well. Remember, length is fundamental, but goes by other names, distance. What about volume? Is that fundamental or derived? Yeah. That's right. It's made up of only one kind of quantity, but there are three of them, right?
Yeah, three.
Volume is length times width times height, or distance times distance times distance. So that would be like a molecule made of three of the same kind of atom. But that's enough to make it derived. Volume is derived just like area is derived, and therefore any volume unit, like a liter or a teaspoon, any legitimate volume unit is therefore also derived. Force, we talked about. Just remember that weight is always force, but not all forces are weights. There's other kinds of forces. Temperature, we haven't really talked about. And this one is similar to mass and weight, which get confused. There's a similar confusion between temperature and heat. These are not the same thing. Heat is an example of an extensive property. So-called because the extent, how much you have, matters. Heat, by the way, is the energy of particle motion. The more motion you have in the particles of that sample you have, the more heat there is. But extensive means that not only does the movement matter, but how much you have. The more particles you have, the more overall movement there is, so the more heat there is. Temperature, on the other hand, is an example of an intensive property, where the amount of stuff or the extent does not actually matter. Temperature is a proportional measurement of the average speed of the particles in a sample. Each individual particle in a sample, of course, is moving at its own speed. They're all different speeds. But you can take an average of that population, right? That's what temperature really is. And so to illustrate this difference between extensive and intensive, just consider a large body of water like a swimming pool, for instance. There's heat and there's temperature associated with that swimming pool. You can take the temperature by putting a thermometer in it, right? That's going to give you an idea of the average speed of the particles. You can then take a tiny sample from it, just dip a cup in that pool, and you now just have a little cup full of water from the pool, and as long as you take it immediately, the temperature should be the same, right? Because the amount does not matter, it's an average. You divide that average, you divide by the number of particles in the population, so it doesn't matter how much you have. That's why it's intensive. But even though the temperature of the cup full of water is going to be the same as the temperature of the overall pool, the pool itself has a hell of a lot more heat in it because it has a hell of a lot more particles that are moving than the number of particles in the cup. That's the difference. But anyway, temperature, which is important in biology and other sciences, also has multiple systems. Now, there have been many temperature systems devised over the ages, but there are three biggies that are still in use. One of which is the Fahrenheit or Fahrenheit scale. That's what we cling on to still. And what are the units? Yeah. Not for Fahrenheit. What are the units called? What did you say? I can't. It's hard to hear over this fan. So yell, speak as loudly as I am when you answer me. Degrees Fahrenheit. It's not enough to say degrees because there are different kinds of degrees. So that's why you don't just write degree symbol. You write degree symbol Fahrenheit or F for Fahrenheit. All right. And I can't remember how Fahrenheit was devised for what reason, but it's a scale like all temperature scales are. And so the degrees are the individual units, the gradations on that scale, right? Well, metric actually uses the other two systems. It uses both of them. One of which, as you said, is Celsius or centigrade, but the modern term is Celsius. I prefer centigrade, even though we're not supposed to say that anymore, because centigrade literally means 100 gradations, 100 steps, which is how it was devised. It's based on water. So the units are degrees Celsius. You have to put the C. And the reason it's a centigrade system or a 100-step system is because there's 100 degrees between the temperature at which water freezes and the temperature at which water evaporates or boils. What is the boiling point on the Celsius scale? Boiling point of water? 100 degrees Celsius. And the freezing point is 0 degrees Celsius. Well, water doesn't have any idea about the scale you're using. It's going to freeze either way if it gets cold enough, right? So there's a corresponding freezing point on Fahrenheit. But what does 0 match up with? What's the Fahrenheit freezing point of water? 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Not as easy to remember as 0, but that's what it is. And what about boiling? What is it? No, it's 212. So you can see that this is the same range in temperatures for the two scales, which means since there's 180 steps between 32 and 212 on Fahrenheit, the individual units, the degrees Fahrenheit, must be smaller than the degrees Celsius are, which they are. And by the way, if you look at the conversion factor, if you convert from centigrade to Fahrenheit or vice versa, you'll see a 1.8. That comes from the fact that there's 180 steps per 100 steps in the other. 180 divided by 100 is 1.8. Each centigrade degree is 1.8 times as big as one Fahrenheit degree. That's what it comes from. Well, water freezes at 0, but that's not as cold as you can get, right? Which is why we also have the absolute temperature scale, which is also metric. Like I said, we use 2 in metric. And it can be also, besides the absolute scale, we can call it the Kelvin scale. And what is the unit in the Kelvin scale? Not Kelvin degrees, it is just the Kelvin. So we don't use the degree symbol, importantly. We do for Fahrenheit and Celsius. For Kelvins, the actual units are called Kelvins, and that's abbreviated as just capital K. Okay, well, the reason that this is a useful system is because it's not arbitrarily based on something like water. It is the absolute temperature. And think about what I just said the definition of temperature is. It's a measure of what the average speed of the particles is. That means there's a lower limit, right? Once you stop all motion of particles, you can't go into negative motion. That's why there is an absolute zero, as it's called. The coldest you can get when there is no movement of particles at all. And that's defined as zero kelvins, which, if you measured it in centigrade, would be negative 273.15, I think. Is it 273.15? I think it is. Cold as hell. You can't go below that, though, because it doesn't make sense to say negative motion, right? If you're negatively moving, you're moving again, just in the other direction. So that's... not only are these two, Celsius and Kelvin, metric scales, but they also have the same size. They're called different things, but the units are the same size. 1 Kelvin is the same size as 1 degree centigrade. So 0 Celsius would be 273.15 Kelvins. Water boils at 373.15 Kelvins, which is the same as 100 degrees Celsius. Any questions on those scales? All right. Finally, I have number of particles listed here as an important quantity. This also happens to be one of those few quantities that are fundamental. Number of particles is not made up of other quantities. It stands on its own. And particle is anything you want it to be, anything you can count. It can be planets, houses, protons, atoms, anything you can count. It's fundamental to say how many of those are there. And that's what number of particles is as a quantity. Now, just like the other quantities, you have a choice of units to use. For instance, eggs are often counted in dozens. That's just a number, right? Which you would expect the units to be for number of particles, right? Numbers. Or you can count things in tens. Same thing as dozens, just a different number. Well, it's inconvenient to use such a small unit at like a dozen if the thing you're counting, I mean the population that you're counting the members of, is huge. In other words, if there's a hell of a lot of particles you have to count, it's inconvenient to express the total number in a unit that is small, like a dozen. And that's why we have the unit called the mole. Now, the mole is simply a number, just like dozen means 12 only. Dozen does not mean 12 eggs. Dozen means 12 of whatever you're counting. Similarly, a mole is just a number, but it has a specific value called Avogadro's number. And at least to certain number of significant figures, it's 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd power, which means it is an enormous number. This is an example of scientific notation. If you were to write this in standard notation, it would be 6022 and then 20 more zeros. Huge number, considering that a billion is just 9 zeros, right? Why have such a huge number? Because sometimes we count things that are so small that it takes a hell of a lot of them before you can even have enough to work with. What I'm talking about are atoms and molecules. Atoms are so tiny that just to have enough to see requires an enormous number. So it's more convenient to count them in huge units, which are the moles. But this brings up something about the periodic table, which we'll talk much more about in lecture. On this version of the periodic table, each element has a red number below it. That's called the atomic mass. which is the mass of one atom of that element, whatever element you're looking at. But you can think of this as in two ways. For instance, lithium, 6.941. You can think of that as having units of atomic mass, which means that one single lithium atom has a mass of 6.941 atomic mass units. That's a tiny unit, by the way. But you can also think of that same number as having units of grams per mole. What that means is that if you were to collect a sample of lithium atoms so that you had one mole of them, in other words, 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd atoms of lithium, then that mass that you would have for all of those lithium atoms combined would be 6.941 grams. It's that many grams per mole. And that's the more convenient way of using these, because you can't work with one lithium atom. It's too tiny. But if you carefully measure the mass, and you measure that exact amount of mass, then you have that number of atoms of lithium. Similarly for all the other elements. All right. Everyone doing okay? Yeah. Temperature is also fundamental. So I told you that most of them are derived, which is true, but I gave you quite a few fundamental units just because they're so important. All right, now we can go on to the metric system in particular. Talked about it a little bit. I've already implied that I have a strong preference for it compared to the silly system. By the way, it's the number of years changes every time I teach this, but now it was 50 years ago when I was in fifth grade, which is when I first learned the metric system. And I remember the day because the teacher said, we're going to learn the metric system today and you have to pay attention because pretty soon, this is 1974, pretty soon that's all we're going to be using in this country. Well, half a century later, we're nowhere close to adopting the metric system, even though we should, because it is so much easier. You can learn it in 10 minutes, and as I showed you before, you're still not done learning the silly system. You didn't know the slug. The reason it is so easy is because it is a decimal system, meaning it's based on powers of 10, which are easy to work with for us. All right, now, what we see in this table is a collection of prefixes or prefaces, which are not an entire word, they're just the beginning of a word, right? Like kilo is not a word by itself. You have to specify what the rest of the word is, like kilogram versus kilometer. But whatever quantity you're measuring, you have a choice with just within the metric system itself. You have a choice of many different units to use, and those units, regardless of the quantity, the units use the same set of prefixes. So you have to know what the base unit is for the various quantities that we care about, like mass, for instance, and so on. And that's a unit by itself. The base unit is a unit, like the gram is a unit. You can use that. But you also have a choice of many other units of the same quantity. Besides gram, you have the same word, gram, but prefixed with one of these. And that makes all kinds of different sizes of units. You pick the one that's convenient for you. Now, in this table, notice that the middle row doesn't have a prefix, just a dash. That's what I'm referring to as the base unit. And the base unit depends on what quantity you're interested in. For instance, if you're trying to measure mass, what is the base unit? Gram. If you're trying to measure distance, it's meter. So the choice of the base unit depends on the quantity, right? There's a correspondence. But it's the base unit because the unit is not multiplied by anything, or it's multiplied by 1. 10 to the 0 power is the same as 1, right? Anything other than 0 raised to the 0 power is 1. Sometimes a gram, if you're measuring mass, is an appropriately sized unit to use. Sometimes it's more appropriate, though, to use a smaller unit or a bigger unit. And that's what the metric system prefixes are all based on. Okay, now every step in this table, up or down, represents a change in one order of magnitude. An order of magnitude in science means 1 power of 10. So if you increase by 1 order of magnitude, you're making something 10 times bigger, 10 times as big. If you decrease 1 order of magnitude, then now you have just 1/10 of what you had before. All right? In other words, 10 is 1 order of magnitude bigger than 1. 100 is 2 orders of magnitude bigger than 1. Because 100 is 10 squared, 10 to the second power. The order of magnitude has to do with that exponent. Is that clear? Tell me if it's not. Okay, so did I say 1 order of magnitude? In this table, every step is 3 orders of magnitude change. Not 1 order of magnitude. So if we go from the base to the next one up, notice we're going from 10 to the 0 to 10 to the 3rd. That's 3 orders of magnitude, which is 1,000 times bigger. All right? And then if we go up one more step from that, it's 3 orders of magnitude again, which means compared to the base, it's 6 orders of magnitude. 10 to the 6th is 6 orders of magnitude is times as big as 10 to the 0. When you look at the names of these prefixes, you can see that with just one exception, all of the prefixes above the base are capitalized. And that's by design. That is a reminder that all of these ones that are capitalized are bigger units than the base itself. Capital reminds us that it's bigger. So for consistent, and these prefixes, when you spell them out, that's the whole prefix, but we usually use the symbol, like Y, Z, E, and so on. If we wanted to make this entirely consistent, we would have had kilo capitalized as well, and the symbol would be capital K. We couldn't do that, though, right? Why is that? Because K is already used for kelvins. You can't have ambiguity. When you see K, you don't want to have to ask yourself whether that means kilo or kelvin. So that's the only reason it's a lowercase k. All of the symbols, though, for the prefixes below the base use lowercase for that reason. They are smaller than the base. All right? So you can use a gram, but if it's too small for your usage, you could use a kilogram. One single kilogram is the same as 1,000 grams. Kilo always means 1,000 times. Similarly, a kilometer is 1,000 meters, and so on. Mega is 1,000,000, which is 1,000,000. So 1 megameter is 1,000,000 meters, and so on. When you get smaller, when smaller is more appropriate, you have a bunch of choices. But it's three orders of magnitude each time you jump to another row. Milli means 1/1,000th of. It's smaller than the base. It takes 1,000 of them to make up one base unit. 1,000 milligrams is the same as 1 gram. 1,000th of milli is micro, which is 1,000,000th of the base. All right? Now, milli, reasonably enough, uses M. Micro, as a symbol, uses the mu. That's not a U, by the way, so don't type it in your in a word processor as a U. That's not what it is. It's a Greek M, which is called a mu, and it looks like this. Has that tail before it. It hangs down. Well, it still means M, but we couldn't use M again because M already means milli. That's why it's like that. All right, now, this table is immense in range. It goes all the way from 10 to the negative 24th to 10 to the positive 24th power. So from ridiculously tiny to ridiculously huge. And that means no matter what science you're working in, studying subatomic particles or studying galaxies, there is a unit somewhere in that huge range that's appropriate for you to use. That's the whole idea of having all these choices. But for biology, most of these are too small or too big. So we don't typically use the ones at the top and at the bottom. And that's why in the next page, I have a similar table, but the red ones are ones that you don't have to know for this course because they're just too big to be useful in biology for the top red ones, or too small. Now the white ones are ones that were in the previous table. But the previous table didn't have these yellow ones. That previous table, every step was three orders of magnitude, like I said. But to give even more choices, just on either side of the base itself, not everywhere, just above the base and just below the base, we've added even more steps, which are just one order of magnitude jumps. So a gram, for instance, you can go up and use a unit that is 10 grams big instead of jumping all the way to 1,000 grams, which would be a kilogram. Deca, with a K, means 10 of. So one decagram is 10 grams. Deci, don't confuse the two, deci with a C, means 1/10 of. So it takes 10 decigrams to equal 1 gram. And if you want to go one order of magnitude up from that, it's hecto, 100 of, or 1/100th of centi. Cent means 100. That's why a 100th of a dollar is called a cent.
Why are hecto and hecto capitalized?
I don't know why the word hecto isn't. And I'm not sure whether it's because capital H is a Henry, I think, which is a unit. But they still, I don't know why they don't capitalize the whole word part, even though they don't capitalize the symbol. Maybe just because that would cause people to use capital symbols. That's a good question, though. Okay, so what you need to memorize, to learn, is the white and yellow part. You don't have to learn the red part. And just remember, you don't use any of these prefixes by themselves. Those go in front of the unit, the base unit name. If you're measuring time, it would be seconds, for instance. You could have hectoseconds, milliseconds, seconds themselves, and so on. Now, that's a lot easier than memorizing the system you grew up with in this country. It's not very hard in your head, once you get used to it, to think about how many micrometers there are in a gigameter, for instance. But if I ask you how many eighths of an inch there are in a mile, it's going to take you a little longer. Not that it's not doable, it's just a lot more awkward to use the silly system. So you can learn this pretty quickly, and you'll need to for this course. That brings us to the next major topic, which is called dimensional analysis. And it's something that most students try to avoid doing properly for various reasons. But you need to do it properly, if only to get the grade. You should do it properly because it's the right thing to do. But do it properly just for the sake of your scores. And I'm going to tell you how to properly use it. Now, this overall topic is called dimensional analysis because dimension is another name for unit. There are some quantities that are dimensionless, by the way. They don't actually have any units, like meters per meter. They cancel out, so it's really dimensionless. Anyway, that's why it's called dimensional analysis, and it's used for various things. I'm only going to talk about one major use of dimensional analysis, which is to use it in properly conducted conversion problems. To convert some measurement into other units. That's a conversion problem. Okay? So, I have an example here. How many millimeters are in 150 point? And that point is important, by the way. I'll talk more about that later. 150 point miles. That's the problem. It's a conversion problem because you're not changing the measurement. You're simply expressing that same measurement in different units. In this case, you're converting from miles to millimeters. They're both units of distance. Dimensional analysis is a way to do this properly. And the reason dimensional analysis is used is so that you can keep track of units so that you get the right answer. Now think about what's happening here. We've already made a measurement of a distance. And that measurement in silly units is 150 miles. That's not going to change. The distance is not changing in this process. What we end up with as our answer is the same distance. Now we get to this answer by doing what amounts to serial multiplication, meaning multiplying things one after another. Think about this mathematically. If you start with some value, which is our distance, and you multiply that by several things in a row, if you have to end up with the same value, the same distance at the end, what must be true of the things that you're multiplying by? What is the only way you can multiply things by and come up with the same value? Yeah.
You have to match the denominator?
Well, even less specific than that. Just think about... Right. One is a special number when you multiply. It's called the multiplicative identity, because when you multiply anything by it, you end up with the same value. So if you start with a value and you multiply it by 1 over and over, you're not going to change the value, right? That's really what's happening here. Now, usually when we mean 1, we use the simplest representation of 1, which is the numeral 1. But there's infinitely many ways to represent the number 1. Particularly when it comes to fractional representations. Right? We can represent one many ways as a fraction. What's true of any fraction that equals one? What is it?
The whole number?
The fraction is not a whole number necessarily. No. But if the overall fraction equals one, what do you know about that fraction? You want to say? Well, any fraction involves both. It has a numerator and a denominator. But if the overall fraction equals 1, what do you know about the fraction? Yeah. The numerator is the same as the denominator, exactly. 4/4 equals 1. 4/5 doesn't, right? 101 over 101 equals 1. Any number divided by itself other than 0 is equal to 1. So there are infinitely many ways to represent 1 is the point here. Well, I'll talk more about that in a second, but I said this process is serial multiplication. So in math, what do you call the things that you multiply together? They are called factors, exactly. If you're performing a sum, if you're adding two things, they're called addends. But if you're multiplying them, they're called factors. And if you do that multiplication, you'll get the answer, which is a product. So our answer is going to be a product of these factors. Everything in parentheses here is a factor. But the first one in here is a special factor because it's simply what you're given in the question to begin with. It's the original measurement, in this case 150 point miles. All of the other factors are considered to be conversion factors. And this is what I was talking about with the multiplying by one over and over. You're not allowed to change the distance, you're just re-expressing it. So all of the conversion factors are really just different representations of the number one. Because in every individual factor, the numerator is the same as the denominator, it's just expressed in different units. 1,760 yards is the same as 1 mile, so it's really the whole one divided by the other is equal to one. Do you see what I'm saying there? And therefore, the distance doesn't change, as it should not. Okay, so that's the process. There's all kinds of ways you can express problems that demand this process, but the process is really the same in all cases. So let me go through what's already written, but write it out step by step so that it's easier to follow. In any given problem, you are given something to convert. That's the original measurement. And that's always your starting point. So before doing any thinking even, the first step is simply to write down what you're given. In this case, 150 point. And here's where students want to deviate from how it's supposed to be done. They don't want to write any units. And I think this is because they're used to using calculators and you don't enter units into calculators, so they think it doesn't matter. But it does matter. It can get you a ridiculously wrong answer if you don't pay attention to units. So it's not 150. That's not a distance. That's a magnitude, which is just the size of a measurement. The actual measurement has to have units. So it's 150 miles, which is not M, that's meters. Miles is MI. That's the whole thing you're given, but since all the other factors are expressed as fractions, I'm just going to make this a fraction, so they're all fractions. You can make anything a fraction by simply dividing it by one. Start all of your conversion problems this way. What's given? Now, automatically, well, let me say something first. We're not done. We know we're not done, not just because we only recently started, but because the question is asking us to have millimeters as our units. We don't, right? Right now we still have miles as our units. So the whole idea is to eliminate miles and get to millimeters. That's what the conversion is asking. So the next step is to automatically, don't even think about any numbers here, just make an empty fraction and think about what you have to do here. You need to get rid of miles because they can't be in the answer. At the moment, miles are in the numerator. They're on the top. So the only way to cancel them is in your empty fraction that you're making, putting miles in the bottom so that it'll cancel. Do that before you think about any numbers. Right? They're going to cancel. This is a conversion factor, though, this one you're creating. So it has to equal 1, which means the top has to equal the bottom. We haven't chosen another unit, though. We have miles because we have to cancel those. We could go from miles to anything we wanted. We're trying to get to millimeters. So if you had a conversion factor that goes from miles to millimeters, you could do this in one step. Most people don't have that memorized, though. So we're going to go miles to something else that you grew up with. Well, maybe. It depends on how well you know the silly system. You could go from miles, for instance, to feet. How many feet are in a mile? If you had 20 years to learn this, 5,280. See how convenient that is? You could use that instead of what I used here. 1,760 yards is the same as 5,280 feet. But I'll copy what I have here. We're going to go to yards instead. Write the units first. Once the units are in place, then you think about numbers. And remember, this thing has to equal 1. Now, these are different units expressing the same thing. So the numbers are going to be different, top and bottom. But it's the same size overall, right? This is a little bit like an old pizza joke of the guy that goes into the pizzeria and orders a pizza and is asked, do you want that cut into 6 slices or 8? And he says 8 because I'm particularly hungry today. Well, you don't get any more pizza, right? You're just cutting it into smaller pieces so there are more of them. That's an important thing to remember on these conversion factors. The top equals the bottom, which is why it equals 1. One of the units is smaller than the other. Whichever one is smaller, there's going to be more of them, right? The smaller unit is always going to feature the larger number within that conversion factor. Yards are smaller than miles, which is why it makes sense that the number for yards is bigger than the number for miles. Right? Everyone clear on all that? If you were to stop there, you would be now in yards. Miles are gone, they canceled. But your answer would be in yards. That's why you know you're not done. And this is why it's important to write the units down to know whether you've done it correctly. So you just continue the process. Now you need to get rid of yards since they're not allowed to be in the answer. You can go to anything you want once again, but I've chosen to go to feet. Hopefully you remember that there are 3 feet in 1 yard. Once again, the smaller unit has the bigger number. Right? We're not done because now we're in feet, so we have to continue the process. We can go from feet to inches. Inches are smaller. There's 12 of them per foot. Now we're in inches if we stopped. But this is a distance conversion example that involves not only conversion, but conversion of units, but conversion of systems, because you start with the silly system, you're going to go into the metric system. And when you do that for distance, even though there's all kinds of different ways you could do this same process using different conversion factors, I really wanted to get to inches because there is one particular distance conversion factor that you should bother to memorize because it's not an estimate. It is exact. And that's the one between inches and centimeters. So we get rid of inches, and we can go to centimeters. That allows us to go from silly to metric. But what I meant about exact is that there are exactly 2.54 centimeters in 1 inch. That's not rounded off. You can call it 2.54, or you can call it 2.54 and a million zeros after that. It's exact. Just like 3 yards exactly is 1 foot. We didn't round off to three. The reason this is important is because of significant figures, which I'll talk about in a minute. All right, so now we're no longer in the silly system, but we're not done because we're in units of centimeters, and that's not what the question's asking for. Now, once you get used to the metric system, it would be easy in your head to go from centimeters to millimeters. But I don't want you to do that if you're not familiar with the metric system. Because then you can get confused. Those prefixes that you're going to memorize, those are all based on the base. They're all in relation to the base. Kilo means 1,000 times the base, not 1,000 times any other unit. It's all referenced to the base. So if you are in the metric system, as we are here, but not where you need to be, instead of going directly to where you need to be, go from where you are temporarily to the base, which would be meters. All right. Then you could take advantage of your knowledge that centi means 1/100th of compared to the base. Centimeters is smaller, so it takes a 1/100 of them to make up 1 meter. Then, once you're at the base, you can make one final step and go from the base to where you need to be, which is millimeters. Once again, you can use the definition of the prefix. Milli means 1/1,000th of. So it takes 1,000 of those to equal 1 meter. If you don't carefully write down the units, then you can't be sure that you've set this up properly. All you work with are numbers, it's easy to get one of these flipped upside down, which is going to give you a preposterous answer. But by setting it up this way, you can, if you have done it correctly, every unit should cancel except the ones that are supposed to be in the answer. And that's true here. But we're not done. This is just setting it up. All right? Now it's time to use a calculator, which can be done incorrectly. Calculators operate based on a hierarchy of mathematical operations. Certain operations are done before others. Multiplication and division are done before addition and subtraction. Well, we're not dealing with any addition or subtraction. We're dealing with only multiplication and division, and they're equal in terms of the hierarchy. So it doesn't matter what order you put this into a calculator. But it is important that you do this in such a way that you hit equals only once at the end. Don't keep hitting equals and then times and divided, blah, blah, blah. So what I'm saying is that you could be, what I mean by any order is that you could enter this as 3 divided by 100 times 2.54 divided by 1 times 150. Why would you do that, though? It's going to confuse you. It makes most sense to just simply work left to right across the numerators and then left to right across the denominators, and you can ignore all the ones because multiplying by 1 and dividing by 1 don't change anything. Anything other than 1, though, you enter, and if it's on top, then you're multiplying. If it's on bottom, you're dividing. So someone, I don't have this memorized, this one says. But you would enter this as 150 times 1760 times 3 times 12 times 2.54 times 1,000 divided by 100 and then hit equals only one time. And if you do that, the calculator will likely spit out 241,401,600, which is not the answer for two reasons. The calculator gave you a magnitude, no units. Just gave you the magnitude, right? Which is not correct. Another reason, though, is that it gave you as many digits as it's able to as a calculator. But that violates the concept of significant figures, which is important in science. Any given measurement that you start with has a certain number of significant figures that you're justified in using, considering those digits to be significant. You can't get more significant figures than you started with. So your answer has to have only as many significant figures in it as you started with before you did the calculations. This is why I was making such a big deal about 2.54 exactly and 3 feet exactly per yard. All right? Well, we're given here 150 point. This is why the point matters. That has 3 significant figures. Therefore, our answer can't have more than 3. We have to round it to 3 significant figures. Calculator spits this out. Using 3 and 12 and 1 and 2.54 don't change anything about the significant figure because every one of these is exact. You can add as many zeros after the decimal point as you want. Infinite number of significant figures. They don't constrain us. But this is what the calculator spits out. We have only 3 significant figures to deal with, that we can report, which means 2, 4, 1 are significant. This next one, the 4, is not. So then we go to rounding rules. 4 is less than 5, so we don't round the 1 up. We keep it as 1. But the answer is not 2, 4, 1. These placeholders are still important. It's 241 million, right? We could write that as 241 million, but I wrote it in scientific notation. 2.41 times 10 to the 8th power. Because the decimal point is right here, and it takes 8 steps to get it there. 2.41 times 10 to the 8th power. But even that number, 2.41 times 10 to the 8th, is not the answer. That's just a magnitude. The answer has to have units as well. So it's 2.41 times 10 to the 8th millimeters. That's the end of the calculation, but it's not the end of the process. There's one final step that it's important not to skip. And that's to ask yourself, does this answer make any sense? It's easy to overlook that step. Well, in this case, we're going from 150 miles, which you can picture as a pretty long distance, right? We're expressing that same distance in units that are tiny, millimeters. So you'd expect 150 miles to feature a hell of a lot of millimeters, right? Your answer should be big, which this is, times 10 to the 8th power. It's 241 million. So it does make sense. If it ended up being 10 to the negative 8th, which it could if you flip these upside down by not using the units, it would be drastically wrong. Yeah?
I know for some units, there's like a set number of significant figures that's like default to or whatever. Do we have to memorize those?
Well, it's not really a default for the units themselves. It's a convention with respect to certain measurements being presented in papers, for instance. But you're never allowed to use more than you start with. Sometimes, for convenience, they'll round them to even fewer just because it's easier to read. But no, there's no rule that you have to memorize with respect to that. Okay, now, does this make sense, this process? Everyone always says yes. Very few people can do it on the quiz. Yeah. Well, I'm going to do a whole other example because I think it helps to do one more example. And then that will require putting it into a calculator because I'm not going to know the answer in my head. I'm just going to make it up. Let me go to full lights since I'm on the board now. Let's do another distance one, though. Let's do another one that goes between silly and metric, but in the reverse direction. We'll start with metric. We have to end up in silly. So, I can ask 24.7 gigameters, capital G M, is equal to how many inches? It's distance to distance. The distance does not change. Same process. Different starting and ending places is the only thing different. So what is the very first step? Always. Well, yeah, but even before then, you put down what you're already given in the problem, which in this case would be 24.7 gigameters. And yes, you're right. You don't have to make it as a fraction. I just like to because it's cleaner. So I'm going to make that divided by 1. That's your start. That's what you're given. Almost without thinking, you automatically make a new fraction that eliminates gigameters because they can't be in the answer. You can go from gigameters to anything you want. If you have gigameters to inches memorized, use it. But you probably don't. So here we're in the metric system, right? We would let, since we're trying to go to the silly system, we want to eventually get to centimeters. So we can take advantage of centimeters to inches. But like I said, I don't want you to go from somewhere in the metric system to somewhere other than the base in one step. So go from gigameters, which is where you are, to meters temporarily. Then all you have to remember is that giga means what? Does anyone know? I know you haven't memorized these yet, but does anyone know offhand? Yeah.
10 to the 9th.
Right. 10 to the 9th is what, though? In words. 10 to the 9th is a billion. Kilo is 1,000. Mega is 1,000,000, 10 to the 6th. And 3 more orders of magnitude, 10 to the 9th, is giga. So, meters are far smaller. Since giga means 1,000,000 of, that means it takes 1,000,000 meters to equal 1 gigameter. You can write it one with 9 zeros. I'm just going to write it as 10 to the 9th meters in 1 gigameter. Okay? Now that we're at the base, we can go to centimeters so that we can take advantage of that jump to inches that I was talking about so we can get to the silly system. Centi means 1/100th of. So there are 100 of them, 100 centimeters in 1 meter. Always the smaller unit gets the bigger number. Okay, now we can take advantage of centimeters to inches. Centimeters have to go on the bottom here because we're trying to get rid of them when they're in the top right now. But no matter whether inches or centimeters are on the top, it's always 2.54 centimeters in 1 inch. So the 2.54 always goes with centimeters. It's the smaller unit, it gets the bigger number. Now we're in the silly system, because all of these have canceled. Oh, and now we're actually done setting it up, because inches is what I wanted. If I asked for yards, you could go from inches to yards, for instance. Okay, so that's the setup, and the fact that they all cancel except the unit that's required means that we probably set it up correctly. Now it's a matter of putting it into the calculator. So do this. If you have a calculator, I'm not going to do this in my head. But enter it as 24.7, sorry, times 10 to the 9th, or 1 followed by 9 zeros, however you want to type it in, times 100, divided by 2.54, equals. Let's see whether we get more than one answer. We should all get the same answer if you put them in correctly. Yeah. 24.7 times 10 to the ninth, or 1 followed by 9 zeros, times 100 divided by 2.54 equals. Anyone have an answer? Now, it's not the final answer, it's what the calculator spits out. What is it? Seven, two, four, four.
Zero, 9, 4, 4, 8, 8.
Okay, that's enough. That's the magnitude. Is it times 10 to anything?
Yeah. E
what?
11.
Times 10 to the 11th power. That's what E11 means. Times 10 to the 11th power. And that's only the magnitude, right? It doesn't have any units, but the units, since the only thing left here is inches. That's not the answer, though, right? Because this has more significant figures than we're allowed to use. How many significant figures should our answer have? 3. Significant figures is not the same thing as decimal places. Okay, so let me... I'll talk about significant figures more in just a second. But the 2, the 4, and the 7 are all significant. So there's 3. That's all we can use in our answer. Which means 9, 7, and 2 are allowed to stay in. We look at the next digit, it's not 5 or more, so we don't round 2 up. Which means our reported answer... Did everyone else get this value, by the way? So that was correct. 9.72 times 10 to the 11th inches. That's the answer. But what's the final step? Ask yourself whether it makes sense, right? We're going from 27 gigameters, 27 billion meters, which is huge, right? Putting that in terms of inches, which are small, so you should expect there to be one shitload of inches in that far a distance, which there is. 10 to the 11th is a big number. Okay? So yes, it does make sense. Now, a little bit more about significant figures, which also has to do with scientific notation versus standard notation. Scientific notation is the one that uses times 10 to whatever. There's 2 reasons in science for using scientific notation, 2 major reasons, but they're not of equal importance. The less important reason we use scientific notation is for convenience. For instance, if you're working with huge numbers, like 14 quadrillion, you could write that as 1, 4, and a bunch of zeros, but that's a pain in the ass. Or if you're dealing with a quadrillionth of something, you could write it as, in standard notation, 0 point, a lot of zeros, and then 1, 4. That's also a pain in the ass. So expressing it in scientific notation is just easier because it's more compact, less writing. That's not the important reason, though. The important reason for using scientific notation is that it eliminates ambiguity with respect to significant figures. A value can have ambiguity, meaning you don't know how many significant figures there are. This is why I didn't write 150, I wrote 150 point. But let's consider 150 by itself. That's standard notation. How many significant figures does it have? Well, you don't know from that version of it, because it features a trailing zero. Any non-zero digit is significant in any measurement, or in any given number that you have. So 1 and 5 are definitely both significant. You know this has at least 2. The zero might be significant or maybe not. Because it's trailing, you don't know. All right? Well, putting it into scientific notation eliminates that ambiguity. If this actually only has 2 significant figures, then you would express 150 as 1.5 times 10 to the second. You have to go two steps to get there, right? If the zero actually is significant and the same 150 number has three significant figures, then you would write it as 1.50 times 10 squared. So in scientific notation, whatever you write before the times 10, doesn't matter whether they're zeros or not, every digit is significant. That's the big use of scientific notation. You tell at a glance that this has exactly three significant figures, whereas this has exactly two. But you can't tell from 150 whether it has two or three. You see that? Okay, now if a zero is in between non-zero digits, like 1201, that has four. This zero is significant because it's followed by a non-zero number. So it's only the trailing zeros that are ambiguous, and that's what scientific notation gets rid of. All right? Now, it might sound from my voice that we're done, because that was the last page, but we're not done. Go ahead.
You said you like to make them into fractions. Are there other ways?
Yeah, you could simply just write it this way without the fraction notation. It doesn't change anything mathematically. I just like to make it a fraction because all of these are fractions. That's just convenience. I mean, it's just preference. There's no correct way. Okay, even though we're out of slides in that presentation, I still have some more definitions to give you. Three definitions specifically. I want to distinguish between accuracy, precision, and resolution. All three very important parts of science, especially when you're making measurements in science. And accuracy is a good place to start here. Accuracy is simply closeness to the truth, closeness to the true value, whatever it is. When you make measurements in science, there's errors associated, right? So the instrument's going to give you a value, but it's not necessarily actually the truth. A highly accurate measurement is one that is very close to what it actually should be. And a lot of textbooks use the very good analogy of throwing darts at a board as representing measurements. An individual dart thrown at a dartboard is like one measurement taken. The center, the bullseye of the dartboard, represents the real value. When you throw a dart, the closeness to the center represents the accuracy. If you don't even hit the board, you're taking a measurement, but it's not very accurate at all. And so accuracy makes sense in terms of an individual measurement. Each individual measurement has an accuracy associated with it. Precision, on the other hand, doesn't make sense to talk about for one single measurement. Precision is repeatability, meaning that an instrument that you use is highly precise if measuring the same thing over and over gives you exactly or almost exactly the same measurement each time. It's repeatable. Right? You could stand on a bathroom scale three times, making three measurements. If you get exactly the same weight indicated, that's high precision. In the dartboard analogy, throw three darts, or some number, more than one. The grouping, the tightness of the grouping of the darts represents the precision. And now notice, you can throw a very tight grouping of three darts. They can be right next to each other, but they can be off on the wall. Tight grouping. That would be high precision, but very low accuracy, because none of them is close to the truth, right? They're close to each other, though. That's what precision is about. Obviously, you don't want that in science. You want high precision and high accuracy, which would be a tight grouping right around the bullseye. Notice also, using the dartboard analogy, that you can have low precision but high accuracy in an average. If you have three darts all over the place, but they form a triangle whose center is right on the bullseye, it's very low precision, but when you average them, you're going to be right on the dot. See what I'm saying there? But you want high precision and high accuracy, both. Those are both different from from resolution, the third definition. And resolution has to do with significant figures. This is really what we're adjusting when we round to significant figures. We're making sure we don't use more resolution than we're allowed to use. Resolution, as linguistically, is the noun form of the verb resolve. To resolve means to discriminate, is another word. It means to tell apart two things, to recognize that they are different from each other. And if we can do that, then we are resolving them, we say. So a familiar visual example would be to consider, make a mark on the wall, black mark, say. And if I stand close enough to that mark, make two marks separated by some distance. If I stand close enough, my eyes are able to resolve them and tell that it is actually two distinct points. I have high enough resolution in that case to be able to tell the difference, to discriminate them. But if I stand farther and farther back, eventually there will be a distance at which my eyes, at least, fail to resolve them. And those two points will look like one point to me. I've lost resolution. And therefore, I'm not allowed to use any higher resolution because I don't really have that resolution. This is why you have to round things only to the resolution level you have. If you use another bathroom scale example for resolution, you know, I could ask you to stand on the scale and report your weight to me. You would give me whatever number of pounds, let's say. And then I would say, okay, stay on the scale, but I'm going to hand you a postage stamp. Now I want you to tell me the combined weight of you and the stamp. Well, if it's a normal bathroom scale, it's not going to be any different, right? Because the scale is not able to resolve the difference in weight between you and the stamp. So it's going to give you the same answer. If you used a very high resolution scale, it would be able to give you different numbers because it really is different weights, right? You and the stamp weigh more than just you, but the scale that can't resolve that is not going to be able to tell the difference, and therefore you're not allowed to use those extra digits. That's the difference. Okay. Now I am done for the day, and this is where people every term, wanting to get the hell out of here because you're sick of hearing me, will say, yeah, it's all clear, and then, so they can get out the door. But then the first quiz comes, and it's usually disastrous. So it's fine if you want to get out of here. I understand that. But practice dimensional analysis at home. Get used to the process. Know how to use it correctly. Listen to this recording for the sake of the next quiz. That's what the quiz will be based on. Yeah. It's used for other things besides these conversion problems, but I'm just not going to get into that. This is the only thing that you have to know for this course. Don't forget any bottles that you left. Yeah.